You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Pittsburgh diners and travelers. Good afternoon to our overseas listeners. And good morning, Rabbit.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. The British are coming again. You better watch out.
Exactly.
Guys and gals, the British are coming.
We have on the phone our first guest, Alex Collins, who is a Brit by origin. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was born in Surrey, just south of London, and then my family emigrated to the United States about 19 years ago.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, you're here to talk to us about your account executive for this fabulous premier coffee, Lamil Coffee.
That's right, Lamil Coffee, and we're based in Los Angeles, so a lot of times people will say L.A. Mill, but it's actually Lamil Coffee.
Right, and I have a hard time because your very smart logo wraps it around. So
it
that
does
I keep,
indeed.
So in my head, I keep seeing the logo, which is different. So I first contacted you because of the exotic teas that you were having.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
I mean, I had never heard of, well, I've heard of white pomegranate tea, and then my Cha Select sounded reasonable.
Yeah, that's right. You actually say that the way you should really say that is Gen with a soft G, Genmai Cha.
Right. I once learned that in art history, but I can't remember. And then there's this white Schizandra berry tea, which I'd never heard of at all.
You said that correctly. Schizandra is a very, very small, almost the size of a peppercorn, fruit from China. And it's very, very tart, almost like you are eating a candied sweet tart.
But there were excellent teas.
Excellent.
But in our conversation, you told us that actually you were a coffee company.
Correct.
And your website is just absolutely an encyclopedia, and it's beautifully designed, too.
Thank you. Thank you. We've put a lot of effort into it and a lot of work, and we're obviously constantly updating it as the needs of our clients change. We're primarily a wholesaler. We serve in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and in Southern California, even a variety of places around the country. Our primary market is restaurants, high-end restaurants, hotels, spas, places like that. But we also have a demand now for a retail environment, and that was the impetus for us creating the website initially.
I see.
Now, the story is interesting. This business has been in a family for some time.
Correct.
A family called Min, and we think that perhaps the Mins are not from Surrey.
No,
or,
not so much.
Or even from Yorkshire, or even from Los Angeles, for that matter.
No. The Mins are actually South Korean by birth. Craig Min is our CEO, and he's had the company in its current concept for about the last 10 years, and he personally has been roasting coffee. He started watching his dad roasting coffee here in L.A. He grew up in L.A. He's a second-generation American, Korean-American.
I see.
And he actually started roasting coffee himself when he was about 13 years old.
Wow.
But he took over instead of going to college, as we at least that's what we read in the PR
That's
material.
Correct. That's correct. It was an education by fire. You know, he really threw himself into this and has an immense passion for coffee. And when you meet Craig, he's very young, but what he lacks in a piece of paper education, he really makes up for in a practical application and a practical education, really dealing with very, very high-end clientele that you would be expected to deal with here in Los Angeles. You know, we have definitely a discerning consumer base at various restaurants like the Providence with Chef Michael Cimarusti.
Do you like that restaurant, by the way?
Oh, fabulous. Yeah, he's a genius in the kitchen and does some wonderful, masterful things with seafood.
As an aside, what do you view as the top five restaurants in Los Angeles?
Wow, that's a really tough question because L.A., I think, is different
around
than many other cities. It's sort of going through a renaissance
that's
in restaurants
that's
now.
That's why I'm asking, yeah, because it was nowhere for a long time.
You're right. It really wasn't because it wasn't a destination for restaurants. There were tourists who would come into L.A. and they would, you know, eat out of necessity, whether it was fast food or what have you. And then the residents, unless you were in sort of Beverly Hills or, you know, Marina Del Rey or Malibu, you didn't really have anything. But that has really changed in the last few years and is continuing to change. I think, obviously, I mentioned Providence with Chef Michael Cimarusti. He's quite well known.
And how about Sona?
Sona, another fabulous restaurant here in Los Angeles. There's a husband and wife team, Karen and Neil Fraser. They have a restaurant called Grace that is very well known. They do homemade donuts, almost beignets, on a weekly basis, and that alone draws a crowd. And then there's totally different concept restaurants or destination spots like Sprinkles Cupcakes, for example.
Oh, I know about them, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, Sprinkles, they opened a few years ago in Beverly Hills, and you'll walk in, and there'll be 20 people in front of you in line, and by the time you get to the checkout, there's 20 or 25 people behind you.
Well, and I mean, I picked this up as a major trend, probably about almost close to a year, and it's just taken off. We even have two of these places in Pittsburgh now.
Oh,
the
wow.
Cupcake phase.
But we are going to talk about coffee.
Yeah, Peter was going to. I knew he was going to do that.
I try to keep us on track here.
Alex, I was not making eye contact with him because I knew he wasn't going to let me get through the rest of the restaurants. Let's go back to coffee.
This company is more than just a coffee company. It has a philosophy, a very fundamental philosophy. At least that's what the marketing materials seem to say.
Correct. We really do. We believe, really, we're very passionate about coffee, but we realize that in our dealings, it's more than just coffee. It's actually about a relationship. It's not a transaction. We like to create long-standing relationships with our clients. We know them by face. We know them by name. You know, when they call me, they're going to get me on the phone. And if they have a problem, we're going to be able to take care of that.
Yeah. You don't actually.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ann.
You do not have plantations. You do not grow them. You source the beans, you roast them, and you distribute them, right?
That is exactly correct. We source our coffee from 18 different countries around the world, and it's broken down very loosely. Mexico, Central and South American coffees, Ethiopian and Kenyan in Africa, and then there's various coffees from the Far East, Indonesia, Sumatra, that sort of area.
Are these a fair trade or not?
Some of our coffees are organic. We're currently developing an organic line, but we don't have those available yet. We are really, really diligent in finding the best organic estates available. And once we're really happy with that, we'll release 3, 4, or 5 single origin or single country organic estates. And then we'll create blends in our own tasting room doing R&D. And then we'll release a few blends, including an organic espresso blend.
Well, what about fair trade? That seems to be the buzzword.
Fair trade is a buzzword. It's a buzzword in coffee. It's a buzzword in tea. Sometimes it's very complicated because you can have something that's organic, but it's not necessarily fair trade. But then if you have something that's fair trade, it's organic. And fair trade is a movement that has come along in recent years, and it's very important because it basically provides for a fair trade or a fair living wage for those farmers on those coffee estates or tea estates. It also extends out to other commodities.
Yeah,
also.
Vanilla for one, yeah.
Exactly. And it is a concern of ours, and it is important. One of the things to note, even though we don't currently have an organic line of coffees, we're doing conventional coffees, all of our coffees are from the top 0.3% of the available beans on the planet. And as a result, they're all hand-picked versus machine-threshed or machine-harvested.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting because the quantity you must do, that's a very labor-intensive thing.
I'm glad you brought that up. If you think about it conceptually, in your mind, coffee beans are actually the seed of a cherry. And 1 pound of coffee.
That's why they're called cherries, I see. Okay.
Exactly. 1 pound of coffee has approximately 4,400 beans. So that means a cherry picker, if they're picking by hand, they're picking 2,200 cherries per pound of coffee. So it's a very, very labor-intensive product and process. And as a result, our level of quality that we bring into our warehouse here in Los Angeles is higher because they've all been looked at by eye versus just threshed by a machine. So you're going to get unripe or overripe cherries that way.
Now, do they ever go on to become cherries?
No, it's a different product. That cherry itself is actually removed from the bean in a number of different ways, two different ways mainly, depending on the geography, the dry method or the washed method. The dry method, the cherry is left out in the sun to bake, and it will literally just bake away, and then somebody will come back and pick up the beans. In the washed method or the wet method, the cherries are literally high-pressure washed away from the beans, and then again, the beans are picked. So the cherry doesn't really have much of a use beyond just an agricultural feed supplement.
So nobody ever ate coffee cherries.
This actually is a fabulous full circle to the legend of how coffee was discovered in Ethiopia by a goat herder named Kaldi, K-A-L-D-I. hospitality. He once lost his goats, basically, and when they returned, they were really rather frisky and feisty and full of energy. So he followed them and wondered what they were doing and saw them eating this fruit, eating this cherry. So he started eating it. And thinking it was the cherry, it was actually the beans that gave him his sort of stimulation and, you know, excitement and sort of acumen and focus in his eye. And it turned out that was sort of the urban legend or the birthplace of coffee.
Yeah, I think I heard that story before. I'm not sure that was applied to coffee, but it was some goat herd and a flock of goats getting energetic over something.
Exactly. Well, it was coffee.
That was it.
Okay, now tell us why you're, I know you've got premium berries. Why is it so smooth and rich in flavor, your coffee?
There's a number of reasons. We don't just make coffee. I mean, that's our primary focus, but we believe it's a bigger undertaking than that. So we've created what we call Coffee Care. It's a 5-point program that we install and instill of all of our clients, all of our guests. The first is coffee. You want to have an amazing bean product, and we've already talked upon that. The second is you really need to have customized water filtration. Coffee and tea are about 98 or 99% water, and if you're just using a tap water or a baseline water, the quality of that water could be compromised severely. As a result, what we do in our clients is we actually install a customized water filtration. The third is the equipment. You've worked with, you know, probably great restaurant equipment or great stove equipment, and as it continues to degrade over time, the quality of the product that's being put out may be compromised. So what we do is we have a full group and a full core competency group of technicians, and it's their sole job to make sure every piece of equipment that goes out into the field is in tip-top condition, and then when it's in the field, it's maintained.
Is it that when I did the coffee in the French press coffee maker with Pittsburgh water, it still tasted smooth and good and rich?
Because you were probably using the right proportion of coffee to water. That's a huge, huge factor. If you're not using enough coffee, your coffee will taste watery or flat. And if you're using too much coffee and not enough water, it will taste over-extracted, or that's where people commonly refer to coffee as being bitter. And there really is a mathematical, you know, formula and factor that goes into how much coffee per ounce of water that you're using.
Well, now, let's not lose sight of the fact that this is a product that on the menu listeners will be able to get at a reasonably small number of dining establishments. How do people get the coffee for themselves?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked. We talked a little bit earlier about our website and its importance in our marketplace now. LamilleCoffee.com, LamilleCoffee.com. Talks a little bit about our company philosophy and background. We're serious without being stuffy. You know, We're very, very passionate about what we do. And I'm tasting 10, 15, 20 different cups of coffee a day.
You must be a bag of nerves here. Alex, we need to take a break. Can you hold on for a bit?
I would love to.
Okay, we'll take a break.
Great.
What can I say about Real Estate 101 in just 10 seconds? Not much, but in a whole hour? Now that's a different story. Join me, Phil Marcus, each Saturday afternoon at 1 here on Pittsburgh's Talk Radio, The Edge, AM 1550.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go. Fast.
Influenza is a serious disease.
Are you talking to me?
If you have asthma, diabetes, or other chronic medical conditions, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you're 50 or older, yes. If your child is between 6 and 23 months, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you live or work with those at high risk, yes. Influenza will kill as many as 36,000 people this year. It's that serious. Prevent influenza. Get immunized. A message from the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We have two guests now on the line. We have Alex Collins.
Let's not forget what we usually do by habit at the beginning of the second segment, which is to remind everybody that if you want to follow all of On the Menu's activities, you go to www.onthemenuradio.com. You can email us there. You can look at our pictures there. You can listen to programs there. You can read articles there. You can find fascinating new products, new things to do with food, travel, and lifestyle across the world.
And you can email us.
And you can email us with your opinions.
Well.
And we block all contrary opinions.
Anyhow, so I started to say we've Alex Collins, who is La Mill Coffee, who we talked to the last segment, on the line. And on the other line, we have a new guest now. We have Mary Rogers, who is the Director of Marketing for Cuisinart and, I learned, Waring. Is that correct, Mary?
That's correct, yes. They're right. Sister companies.
Yes. We were just wrapping up the discussion with Alex about their website. You say you know this coffee, Mary, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You've had this coffee?
Yes.
Well, there's this new thing, apparently, on the website. On the website is how you're going to be able to order this if you're not going to buy it in restaurants. The website is?
It's lamillcoffee.com. So it's lamillcoffee.com.
Not millcoffee.com. Okay. And on there is a new product, which is using this coffee in handcrafted chocolates, and that sounds pretty good to me.
That's right. It's something we're doing just in time for Valentine's Day. You know, it's a perfect pairing of coffee and our teas into handcrafted artisan chocolates.
Great.
Well, we actually miss Valentine's Day, but that's all right. There's always Mother's Day and birthdays and other special treats around the calendar.
Mary, he was just talking, Alex, about methods of brewing and equipment is probably one of the more important items in getting a good cup of coffee. And so I said this would be a nice transition to Cuisinart.
Well, you know, we do have many different types of coffee makers. One specifically that actually grinds the beans and brews the coffee in one step, so consumers can get a truly fresh cup of coffee right at home using fresh beans.
Yeah, guess which coffee maker our son and daughter-in-law requested of us at their bridal shower.
A grind and brew, of course.
Of course. It has to be the most expensive coffee maker. But I'm sure it makes good coffee, and the sad part about it is we just visit them, they don't even use it.
That is sad.
What do they use?
Well, I don't think maybe they do.
Sure they use it. They've been brewing decaf because we just had a baby.
Okay.
Anyhow, back to the way we ended up with having Mary on our program is we received this fabulous product called the Griddler.
Yes.
And we were going to talk about the Griddler, and then we thought and said, you know, Cuisinart is like an incredible company, and we've never interviewed anybody from Cuisinart. And then it was only just today that I found out you were also with Waring, which
yes.
is, well, why don't we start out with Cuisinart? Can you give us just a little background on the company?
Yes. I mean, the company has been around since the early 70s. They first introduced gourmet quality cookware to the American marketplace. But
that came before the food processing.
Yes, but what really put them on the map was launching the first food processor, and that is really what the company had made its mark on. But, you know, it's been 35-plus years later, and we are, marketing and manufacturing high-quality appliances and cookware. You know, we have a very vast line, very popular and very well-designed and well-thought-out, very successful.
Well, you know, I probably had the original Cuisinart, and I'm probably only on my third one in that 35-year period. The original, and we also have a piece of cookware that we got. We were part of the original, what was the class action suit on price fixing with the former owner of Cuisinart. And so we got this wonderful oval pan that Peter has just discovered.
I use it to cook on top of the stove just all the time. I mean, the fact that it's oval even helps, because if you're cooking a long by narrow thing like fish, it suits the shape much better than something round does. But the best part about it is that although it's not designed to be nonstick, it sticks very little.
Yeah.
It's thermally very effective. You know, it heats up very quickly, comes to temperature very quickly, reboils very quickly. So it's a perfect device. And the lid, the domed lid, is a big help if you want to sweat your onions and things like that instead of having them fry too fast. So for a dumb kitchen hound like me, it's preferable for that reason, because the lid really fits.
Alex, do you use Cuisinart?
I do, actually. I consider myself relatively handy in the kitchen. You know, it's important for a bachelor in Los Angeles. And I do. I have a Cuisinart food processor and some Cuisinart cookware as well. And it's super durable and really is a good product. I remember probably my interest in cooking started when I was very young growing up in England. And we had that first generation food processor.
Right.
But the reason, ladies and gentlemen, that we are here today really is to talk about the griddler.
Yes.
Among other things.
A revolution.
It was very interesting because we came out with the line of countertop cooking appliances, and up until that point, we had really been manufacturing and marketing food preparation appliances. So this was one of the first products that allowed the consumer not just to prepare food, but also to cook the food. And it's very versatile. It's very beautifully designed. It is a brushed stainless steel exterior. It's very versatile in the fact that you can do bone-in meats, fish, chicken, hamburgers. So you can also do anything from French toast and pancakes. It has removable plates that can go right into the dishwasher, so it functions as a panini press, a contact grill, a double wide open grill, and also a double wide griddle. So it's very, very useful, and you can basically cook almost anything on it in 15 minutes or less. A hamburger takes about 5 minutes, because you're actually cooking from both sides of the food, not just one side at a time.
We're in love with this.
Yeah, you can actually get really clever. And I did this Wednesday night at our son's house. So I cooked the first batch of hamburgers both sides. Then I cooked the second batch, but at the same time I fixed zucchini. Grilled zucchini on one side and did burgers on the other side.
Exactly. So you can kind of mix it up. If one person wants fish, other person wants chicken, you can open it up and cook on both sides of the plate at the same time. So it's very...
This is your expanding area. Is this a kitchen top? What do you call them?
We call them countertop appliances.
Countertop appliances.
Cooking appliances.
Now, you're coming out with some new ones.
Yes.
And I think the information that Rachel sent me included an ice cream maker.
Yes.
Now, why is it soft ice cream? It seems unusual.
Well, it's soft serve, so it's more of the type of ice cream that you would get when you go to an ice cream shop. So it's where you actually draw the ice cream down instead of... We have other ice cream makers that you can make more hard-style ice cream, but this is really designed so that you can actually dispense into cones or cups. And it's really focused more on, you know, the fun of making ice cream. It's more interactive than other ice cream makers. You can mix in three different types of ingredients directly into the ice cream before you dispense it. So it's really fun and something that, you know, a family would do together or you would do with kids. It's really, you know, a fun interactive product.
Yeah, you're focusing a lot on entertaining. Is this, we're still in this entertainment mode?
Yes, we are.
I'm sure you know because you have all that market research done.
Yes. you know, we find our consumers, you know, are still very interested in, you know, cooking at home and cooking for their family and, you know, enjoying time together. That's something that we focus on and our customers, you know, also focus on.
What else are you going to be developing? You're going to be announcing a lot of, you're going momentarily almost to the, the appliance show?
Yeah, we have the houseware show, which is in March. you know, we tend to keep things pretty tight to the vest, but we have a couple of really big things coming out in the back half of the year, which we can't talk about until March, of course. But, you know, we'll have a couple of really neat new items that are coming out, so you'll have to watch for those.
Can you talk about these new blenders?
Yes, we have new blenders. We have a couple of new blenders, and we also have, on the wearing side of the business, we have a wine chiller and also a warming and buffet server. So those are really...
We just interviewed somebody from the Cooper Cooler wine chiller. Do you know about that?
Yeah, these are, for the wearing division, we have single bottle wine chillers, and it's pretty neat. You can put one bottle in, everything from a normal wine bottle to a champagne bottle, and it's...
You fill it with ice and water.
No. This is actually thermal electric, so there's no compressor and no ice or water. You put the bottle in, and it has a wine library, and you choose, you know, white and red, and then it runs through all the, you know, available wines.
You know, there you go. So it's
Chablis,
sort of,
Cabernet, yeah. You know, Bordeaux. And you actually set it on that setting, and then it brings that individual bottle to the proper serving temperature.
Interesting.
And electronically.
And the blender is just the latest in the family of wearing blenders?
Oh, the blender that I thought you were talking about was a Cuisinart blender.
Oh, it's a Cuisinart blender.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. But Waring does make blenders, too.
Oh, and so this is a Cuisinart Supreme Power 60-ounce stainless steel. Oh, that's a Cuisinart blender.
Yes, that's a Cuisinart.
All right.
Which is the most powerful?
Well, the SB5600 has like 1,500 watts of pulse power. So
is that good, huh?
It's pretty big.
You know, I always wanted a Vitamix.
you just mostly wanted a blender.
No, I just was looking around. I thought I need a blender. So what would I do? And I'd say I like their ads with the naked chefs with their blenders.
So she's ready for a small fee. She's ready to pose with a 60-ounce stainless steel blender.
Thing.
There you go. Now we can't let the subject of the griddler go without adding a couple of things to it, because this really is a...
He's in love with this. Have you noticed?
I didn't expect to be specially impressed, because people just said it's like a George Foreman grill on steroids, but it's really a whole lot more than that because of the amount of temperature control that you have.
It has dual temperature control. It also, you know, it's very efficient. Like you said, you can actually, you know, sear on it. You can get a really great sear on meats, you know, but it also, it's not so overpowered that it dries your food out. It's very, very efficient. And it's, you know, really versatile for any type of consumer, whether they're, you know, just in their first apartment or if they're, you know, going into, you know, a home where you have children and you need to kind of sometimes, you know, and make anything from grilled cheese to hamburgers or even steak for the parents. You know, it's very, very versatile, and you can make a home, you know, cooked meal in less than 15 minutes and, you know, just put the plates in the dishwasher, immerse them in hot water.
Yeah, that's great.
And
Mary,
you're done.
Mary, we're going to be taking a break. We wanted to say goodbye to Alex, and
okay.
I wanted to have you hang on to the next through the next commercial break.
Sure.
Alex, I thank you so much, and you've been very patient with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, and everybody turn to the webpage, www.lamillcoffee.com.
That's right.
Okay, Alex, I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you, and we'll take a break.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster DeHart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
It's Saturday. You and your wife take the boys to the mall, straight to the food court. Your wife and Pete head for tacos. You and Danny want Chinese. You look up at the menu for a few seconds. You look down to see what Danny wants. But you don't see Danny. Your eyes dart around frantically. You instinctively call out,
Danny! Danny!
From the taco place, you hear a voice.
Hey, Dad! Change my mind!
Every parent knows that feeling when, even for a few seconds, you lose sight of your child. Imagine if he or she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition. But cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember, 412-661-6001. ASP Station, 412-661-6001.
You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we still have Mary Rogers on the line, who is the Director of Marketing for Cuisinart and Waring. You have a big job, Mary.
Yeah, but it's fun, and I've been working for the company for 10 and a half years, so obviously I like it here.
Now, you have a culinary background, too, I understand.
Oh, well, yes. I actually worked in the food service business before I actually figured out what I wanted to really do for a living. So I started out in food and also in retail. So I kind of combined those two loves together. And, you know, I have a, you know, great passion for, you know, cooking, but, you know, not to work as a chef myself, but I really am very passionate about it.
Do you ever get involved with R&D?
Yeah, I do. I'm very involved in, you know, giving my comments and things like that to the product development group. So I'm very involved in that.
And what we've started to talk about, we're following a sort of a an entertainment theme with mm-hmm. your new product line. And you're going to be debuting these at the houseware show.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the ice cream maker. And this blender stuff is big. Big time, isn't it?
Yes. I mean,
why
well,
is that?
You know that, you know, there's so much focus on, you know, smoothies and more healthy drinks. You can see that, you know, whether you're in an airport or if you're, you know, just going into, you know, take and serve restaurants, that, you know, there's a lot more focus on blended drinks. And so we have a new Super Supreme 600, which we launched, that has a 600-watt motor, a 60-ounce glass blender jar, and six speeds. And it's more of a console-style blender. It's kind of a little retro. It's all pre-programmed speeds. It's all dishwasher-safe.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very attractive product.
I've not seen one of those. Are they on the market?
Yes, they're on the market. Mm-hmm. Yep, just introduced.
Now, what do you look for in blenders?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, a lot of companies talk about motor and power and RPMs and things like that. But the most important thing, which is not that easily visible to a consumer's eye, is the combination of the blade mechanism and the blender jar, because they're really very integral in blending. You have to have a well-designed blade system, and also the shape of your jar totally affects the blending. You'll notice a lot of times when you look inside a jar, they'll have ribs running kind of vertically from top to bottom, and that helps redirect the food into the blade assembly so that it's really good at making, you know, a lot of, you know, action, almost like whirlpool action in the blender jar that helps really integrate and emulsify food. If you're doing things like purees or dressings, or even if you wanted to make homemade mayonnaise, you know, that's very important for a blender jar.
Do you want the food you're blending to sink back to the bottom again?
Yes, so, exactly.
So it goes back in contact with the
blades.
Not
be so overpowered that it hangs around the jar.
Yeah, right.
Because then it's not being, you know, well blended. So it's the design of the jar and the blade is very important.
Now, how do you compare this to the wearing? The wearing has an interesting story. I was fascinated with the fact that, well, first of all, Fred Waring was an orchestra leader.
Yes, he was a band leader.
A band leader in my mother's generation, actually.
Yes, and it's a very interesting story because somebody approached Fred Waring about it with a product, and he helped redesign it so that it functioned properly, and that it was introduced in 1936 at the restaurant show in Chicago.
When he didn't design it from scratch. It wasn't
his
idea.
No, he did not design it from scratch. What happened was somebody else had kind of worked on it, and they brought it to him to promote it, but it didn't function. So he actually kind of redesigned it, started his own company, the Waring Company. Basically went around the country, and when he did his radio show appearances and shows and stuff, he actually promoted the blender, and that's how it kind of got off the ground. And the company, you know, that's pretty much their icon product was the Waring blender.
And this, I read that actually Dr. Jonas Salk used it in his research and development of the polio vaccine.
Yes, yes. And a lot of people don't know something interesting about blenders is that they're used in scientific research. And we actually have a division of the Waring Corporation that focuses on laboratory and science.
Oh, really?
And makes blending products. Sometimes they're called different names, but they actually make specialized equipment for labs that do testing.
Well, what was the osterizer?
Oh, I think that was a different product. Wasn't that like a jar on top of a blender?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I recall, because there was something in the press you sent me about somebody named Oser or something.
Oh, that was the original man's name who, Osius, Fred Osius, and he was actually the person who worked on the original design of the blender. He was the one who brought it to Fred Waring. That was his name, Fred Osius.
A small note, we do not own a blender.
The last time we had one was in an apartment that we sublet in Washington, D.C., and put her finger in the blender before the blade stopped.
Oh, that's not smart.
And butchered them. So she went off to the emergency room.
That was the end of your blender.
Everybody really wanted to know what she was making.
What were you making?
The answer was gremolata for ossobuco, just in case you're wondering.
But
he was running a little bit behind.
Yeah, so she was in a hurry.
So at that point, he said, "We're not having one of those at the house."
so we need a full safe blender in the worst kind of way.
Well, no, he moved then into. He thought that the food processor was okay because you couldn't not stop it.
No, right, exactly.
Yeah, do blenders do that now?
No, not. I mean, I had heard that they were thinking of changing some of the, you know, mechanisms so that you couldn't. But I don't think that's happened.
Okay, so you can still blend your finger
but
if you want
to. The
whole
idea is you're supposed to leave the lid on, and that's why there's a small hole in the top that you can't put your hand through there.
You can break it by taking the lid off just to see how
exactly.
It's going. We found that out the hard way. Now we're very intrigued. So we're going to have you come back again when you can. You'll have to let us know when you can announce these new products.
Sure, that'd be great.
And then, because they'll be several months before they'll be in the stores, or will they be available pretty much immediately?
Some of them will be available starting in March.
Okay, great. Well, be sure to send us a note. I'm sure we can fit it in and get an announcement out to listeners to see what fascinating products the Cuisinart and Waring Company are coming up with next. I'm sure there'll be something very interesting.
There will be. There always is.
Now, how about websites, Mary? I mean,
yes, we have two different websites. The Cuisinart website is cuisinart.com, and it's cuisinart.com. And the Waring website is waringproducts.com, so you spell it all out.
Okay.
Waring products.
And that's
right.
W-A-R-I-N-G, not W-E-A-R.
Mm-hmm. W-A-R-I-N-G, as in Fred Waring. The websites will give you
It has all of our latest. We keep them very up to date. It has all of our latest product information on the Cuisinart website. We have a lot of great recipes, and you can keep your own recipe box in there. And
holy mess!
There's some really nice features. You can email recipes to other friends, and it's very, very useful. So it's nice to go back there and check up on it every once in a while.
That's great. Yeah, and there'll be a list of where you can buy the products.
Yes.
I mean, I think there's just about everywhere you can buy the products.
Well, mostly department and specialty stores is our biggest focus.
Okay. I never knew that.
Yeah.
So it's not the, yeah, because that's true. Like, there's a different griddle sold altogether at Sur La Table.
Yeah, it depends. Like, we do some exclusive product for some of our retailers. So once in a while, you will see, you know, something exclusive to them. But in general, we sell to department and then also places like, you know, Williams-Sonoma, Sur La Table.
You do have them in there.
Crate and Barrel. And also, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond, Linens and Things, stores like that.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
No, but, you know, please check out our latest products. There's some great and exciting things coming out. Check out our website.
Well, this is wonderful, and I thank you for joining us, and we look forward to hearing what your new products are going to be.
And we're just going to keep griddling along.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Mary.
And then we're going to start blending, if you give me permission to start blending again.
Okay. And I guess, Mary, so have a great day. And,
thank you.
Mary, thank you.
Have a nice weekend.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So.
Are we going to take a break?
A break?
I think we took one.
I think we just took a break.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Have you been jazzing around yet? It's Sundays from 10 to 12 here on 1550. Get a taste of the latest jazz albums, a concert and club calendar, birthdays, awards, obituaries, and more. Plus featured artist interviews. That's a lot of jazzing. Check it out for yourself. Sponsored in part by Martini's Route 885 Jefferson, original recipe Italian cooking, and Spider Mondanelli's Pittsburgh Jazz Giants, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Jazzing around. Sundays 10 to 12 here on 1550 The Edge.
Well, we're back. We've been talking about coffee, tea, Cuisinart, Waring, blenders, food processors, countertop appliances, I think it's called. And now we're going to go to San Diego.
Now we're dealing with winter escape, folks. Winter escape.
Go ahead.
Kate Buska from the San Diego Convention and Visitors Bureau helped us set up my visit here to Market Restaurant, and we're going to another place tomorrow. I thought you should hear from her some of the reasons why San Diego might be a really good place to come especially when the white stuff's flying in Pittsburgh. So, Kate, tell us about that.
Peter, we're delighted to have you here, and we've been delighted to have you and Anne visiting us and bringing the news of what's going on in the San Diego dining scene back to your listeners. As you mentioned, it gets a little cold there in winter, and San Diego definitely has the antidote to that. It's a great time of year to visit because our weather is generally mild, notwithstanding the cold snap that our friends in the citrus industry have been dealing with in the last few weeks. But San Diego weather is wild in the winter, and it's a great time to come out. You can get really good deals on luxury hotel rooms. Mid-range properties are a great deal, so it's a good time to come to San Diego and take advantage of the wintertime deals. If you want to get out and explore, it's a great time of year. Our whale watching season lasts through March. Whale watching is a huge thing on the West Coast. The California gray whales migrate from Alaska down to the warmer waters of Baja to calve in the winters, and you can take excursions out of all kinds, from large boats to smaller boats, to get up close and personal with the whales and see them as they migrate down the coast. And it's amazing. It's the kind of experience you can't really put into words. And so people definitely come for that. It's great. It lasts from mid-December through mid-March, so your listeners have tons of time to come and check that out. Also, another great wintertime activity, February is Museum Month in San Diego. I know a lot of people who are foodies are also very interested in arts and culture, so it's a great time to come out. The museums in San Diego, stop by any Macy's, you get a discount card, get in half price at all the museums in town. So it's a great time to get out and check out what's going on in the museums. Right now we have the West Coast premiere of the Annie Leibovitz exhibit, which is all of her work for the past 25 years, and she's an incredible photographer. That's the San Diego Museum of Art. So there's a lot of arts and culture, a lot of outdoors activities, but I think really for your listeners, dining is what they're tuning in for, and dining is in San Diego in the winter is really amazing. I think people who live in more climate-controlled areas, places with a bit more season, don't have the experience that chefs in San Diego do or diners in San Diego, where food is fresh and homegrown, grown at farms nearby year-round. And I know that's something you've experienced and talked about on the program, but really we have incredible small family farmers here growing heirloom produce that's coming out fresh year-round, and the chefs are certainly taking advantage of that. That's something you'll find at a lot of the restaurants. You can come here, you can go to the farmers markets if you're interested in meeting the farmers themselves. You can eat out at the restaurants, or even if you're downtown in San Diego, we have a great wine and culinary center right downtown where you can visit with people who really know about the wineries and small producers here and can talk about San Diego made chocolates, strawberries, things like that. So there's a lot to explore here in the winter, and you'll be warm and you'll be well fed.
You will indeed be well fed, and the first restaurant we're featuring, adding to the treasure trove in San Diego, is a wonderful restaurant called Addison. At the moment, Addison is a single building, combination luxury restaurant and golf club. Obviously, there's golf going to be here. A huge resort is going to be built nearby, which will be open later in the year, and we'll have information about that on the program as well. But I had the chance before dinner to catch up with the chef and the sommelier at Addison, so let's hear from them.
On the menu still in San Diego, Peter looking forward to dinner tonight at a restaurant called Addison in a resort that's in preparation called the Grand Something, which is going to open less than a year from now. But we'll explain about the Addison connection in just a little bit. First up, we want to talk to Chef William Bradley about how he came to be at this restaurant, which opened just a few months ago. And then we're going to talk some more about what's in store for Peter on the menu this evening. William?
Thank you for having me. William Bradley, the executive chef of Addison Restaurant. The story to where I am now here at this restaurant started about a year and a half ago. I was introduced to Tom Voss, the president and director of Manchester Finance Group. He had dinner in my old restaurant in Scottsdale, Arizona, which was doing very well at. It was called View. I had been there in Phoenix for about 7 years. Spent a few years with my mentor, James Boyce, at Mary Lane's at the Phoenician, when I got a great opportunity to be on my own and to stay in the Scottsdale area. So basically, what had happened was, through some national recognition of the View restaurant, it brought, again, Mr. Voss out. And he pretty much gave me an opportunity to come back to a beautiful area, which we have here in Del Mar, and take on a great opportunity and a restaurant that has really, really been what I've been looking for all these years.
Listeners, just to put it in perspective, View was rated one of the best new restaurants of 2005 by John Mariani in Esquire magazines. The boss, I think, had a little bit of a clue when he came. He probably already came with his checkbook already, I think. The idea of opening a new place must have been pretty exciting too, William.
Yes, indeed it was. It was this restaurant is a completely different identity and direction than I was doing at Vue. I had carte blanche to pretty much design the kitchen. I watched this restaurant start from the ground up with, you know, wallpaper and carpet. So it was a great opportunity to see what it takes to get a place going and operating. So it was wonderful.
And did you develop a new style in the kitchen as well, or is it something that you were already doing?
Great question. I have completely, you know, adapted a new style when it comes to the food, the concept. At Vue, I was a little bit more experimental with trying to harmonize flavors that in my mind I knew would be exciting, different, very unique with flavor. So basically from that, as you grow on being a chef and understanding the different techniques and the styles, I've more gravitated to simplicity. I think I'm trying to be, as hard as I can, I'm trying to be a purist at what I do with cooking. I really believe in complicated techniques, but when it's put on the plate, there's no more than two or three ingredients that really elevate the dish to different heights, but people are still very familiar with the shape, the look, and the texture.
Now, a lot of chefs we talk to in San Diego say one of the things that attracted them to even come here and then to continue to stay here is the wonderful fresh local produce that's available pretty much 12 months out of the year here. Was that something that helped you with your new approach?
Definitely. We have a great opportunity here. I've come across a gentleman who has a 100% completely organic farm in area called Tierra Miguel, which is about an hour and a half, from the restaurant. I've been out there on numerous occasions. He grows all the vegetables for the restaurant. So, again, to go back on that, it was definitely enlightening to see some of these beautiful things and see it in its purest form, which then basically was kind of my inspiration to the new concept of my cooking.
William, tell us about some of the things that you think are sort of highlights of your menu.
We just actually put a new dish on the menu yesterday. We're using some Prince Edward Island mussels, and we're serving that with a Meyer lemon mousseline, mustard, and sauce charmoula. So it's a great new dish that we're putting on. It has the elements of kind of the creamy mousseline with the citrus, a little bit of the charmoula, which is a Moroccan kind of, traditionally, it's a chutney-style sauce they use to serve with lamb, but it kind of gives the element of spice to the mussels. So the food here is much kind of the layers of flavors. Another dish that, you know, we've been having some great success with that I'm also very into is the potato gnocchis with the cocotte of a farm egg, and it's served with a little bit of aged Gouda fondue and shaved Perigord truffles. So the simplicity that I was talking with before and kind of the different flavors and the dishes that are kind of unique is kind of what we've been really, the buzz around town's been quite receptive to what we've been doing. So
you'll sort of respond if you find a new ingredient that you really like the feel of, then you'll say, what can I pair it with to put it on the menu?
Yeah, when it comes down to that, it's, again, like I said, I try to really, really think about balancing and harmonizing dishes and flavors. Like I said before, in the past, I used to do things that were more exotic. It's more simple. Everyone kind of knows what gnocchis are, an egg, a truffle, Gouda, but then taking that the technique and really doing something that they really never had before based on the flavor.
Right. Well, I'll include a little report on the things that I have when we go live with this interview. In the meantime, we caught up with Jesse Rodriguez, who, it turns out, is responsible for the wine program here. He was at the French Laundry. He knows our old friend David Lynch as well. It shows you what a small world it is. But David's in New York, and he's all the way out here in California. But Jesse, tell us about how you structured the wine program. This is a new restaurant, so you started with an empty cellar and with a new chef to match wines to. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I was pretty fortunate. I knew William back in Arizona, and we knew each other through the Phoenician and through the Hyatt. We're William received a lot of great press at View. It was at that time that I made my exit from Arizona and went over to Napa. And at that time, I worked at the French Laundry. And I was very fortunate working under an American master such as Thomas Keller and studying from him, extrapolating everything that he puts on the menu and understanding his philosophy. With that said, I also worked with Paul Roberts, master sommelier, corporate wine director at Thomas Keller Restaurant Group. I was fortunate because he took a great liking to me and sent me over to New York, where I ran into Mr. Lynch, helping out at Per Se, sent me over to Vegas at Bouchon to help open that up, get the sommeliers up and running, but I still have the moniker as head sommelier, French Laundry. So I was everywhere. I was one of the few sommeliers that worked at every single department that Thomas had.
That's great. So what's the write-up I got said, there are intriguing wines from top California cult vintage wines, the new discoveries from South Africa and South America. So give me a couple of highlights.
Sure. Okay, so some of these highlights, we have actually a complete vertical of Screaming Eagle. Very hard to get California cult Cabernet. Vineyard 29, Jones Family, the largest collection, might I add, also of Diamond Creek, outside of the winery itself. Complete vertical. We're talking Gravelly Meadows, Red Rock Terrace, Lake. In addition to this, as it relates to South Africa, some great cult producers such as Hamilton Russell from Walker Bay, you know, and then a lot of just small grower producers that we're actually doing special bottlings for, something I was able to work with the owners and the winemakers.
Special bottling being?
Well, being that, for example, Viadere Wines, Aaron Jordan with Failure and Jamie Whetstone, what brings them together and what brings us full circle also is that they're great friends of mine. They also, they're working with us to do their own just regular Failure, regular Whetstone. But at the very back of the bottle, as I show you this bottle, for example, it would say, you know, produced and bottled by Alan Viadere and Jesse Rodriguez, exclusively bottled for Addison Restaurant at the Grand Del Mar. So it looks like Viadere, but it's very unique. It's one barrel just for us.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. I can hardly wait. Jesse, thank you for talking to us, and I'll look forward to your recommendations for this evening.
The pleasure's all mine.
The Viadere, it turns out, isn't out of the winery yet. Jesse was on his way, he said, next week, I think, to finalize the selection and then get it all bottled, and it's going to be on their wine list a little bit from now. But I think some money went into the cellar there from a Mr. Manchester, who is the developer of this estate in California. Watch for it. We'll have information about it, of course, on the menu as soon as it's open. And we'll see you again, same time, same place, next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.